So we have gathered on a most auspicious occasion, the celebration of the 40th anniversary of the manifestation of the ISKCON Los Angeles community here on Watsika Avenue, which has come to be known as New Dwarka. Srila Prabhupada had commented that you have New York, New Jersey, so many places named after the cities of the old world. So why not New Vrindavan? And so by extension, we have New Dwarka. At the time that Srila Prabhupada and the devotees acquired New Dwarka, I was in Boston. And in Boston, we heard the news that Srila Prabhupada, our founder Acharya and spiritual master, had acquired a wonderful property that had been a church. And Srila Prabhupada made New Dwarka his Western world headquarters. And he established New Dwarka as the ideal center. He spent months on end here. At one stage, he stayed for 8 months. And he trained the devotees. And the activities and standards in New Dwarka became the model for the other temples in ISKCON. One devotee named Shilavati was the head pujari, and under Prabhupada's guidance, she and the others established a very high standard of deity worship. And then if any temple wanted to learn the proper standard of deity worship, they would send a devotee here to learn, or they would write here. The Sankirtan was also exemplary. The devotees would go out on the streets and chant Hare Krishna. Vishnu Jan was the main leader, and all the devotees were so eager to go out and chant with him. And Tamal Krishna was the main organizer. He made sure all the brahmacharis had nicely colored cloth that matched, and all the ladies had very nice saris, and they danced in step. It was a wonderful performance. And people were attracted. And as we heard in Boston, the devotees had very personal relationships with the deities. The deities were really the center of the community. and the center of the devotees' lives. And there was a wonderful reciprocation between the deities and the pujaris, and the Sankirtan devotees and the public. Everyone was in the mood of Sankirtan. Everyone was in the mood to share the wonderful knowledge and happiness that they had found in Krishna consciousness with others. And the pujaris also considered themselves to be servants of the Sankirtan devotees. The pujaris, the priests, you could say, who worshipped the deities in the temple, were in the mood that we want to decorate the deities very beautifully. So the Sankirtan devotees will be inspired to go out and chant and tell people about Krishna. And the goal of the devotees who went out to chant was to bring people from the street back to the temple to see the deities, see Sri Sri Rukmini Dwartadish, Sri Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra and Sri Sri Gaur Nitai. So there was a wonderful reciprocation between the deities and the devotees and the public. And in Boston, we heard stories of Vishnu John. Not only did he sing beautiful kirtan and play wonderful mridanga drums, but he was the temple commander. He was in charge of delegating different services to different devotees and seeing that all the services were done. And in Boston, we heard stories of how when the devotees got an assignment, they would rush to do it. And as soon as they were finished, they would rush back to Vishnu Jan and say, "I did what you told me. What else can I do? What else can I do?" And we were astonished to hear these stories of the wonderful mood of service of the devotees and the great inspiration they got here. And we heard about the Sunday programs, the Sunday festivals. They were really festivals. All week long they would invite people to the Sunday festival, and when they came, it was a real festival. There would always be some special event, a drama or I'm not sure exactly, but something like churning butter or just all sorts of activities that were very appealing and attractive to people, to introduce them to the mood and culture of Krishna consciousness. And then, of course, a wonderful feast. Then, personally, after I had served in Boston for some time, and Srila Prabhupada had worked to establish the movement in America, he decided to return to India to establish the mission there. And he asked that one person from each temple sort of the second person in each temple come to India to assist him. So I went from Boston, and even in India, New Dwarka was a great inspiration. Srila Prabhupada devised a program called Life Membership, which he said was a way to distribute his books and to give people association. The idea is that someone would give 1,111 rupees, and they would get all of Srila Prabhupada's books that had been published up to date, and they would get all the books that would be published in the future, and they would also have a lifetime subscription to Back to Godhead magazine. And when they traveled, they could stay at our centers, in our guest facilities. So it was a very important program that Srila Prabhupada emphasized in India. And soon after the devotees got New Dwarka, there was an issue of Back to Godhead magazine with a picture of the temple on the front, and so many devotees in front of the temple, and pictures of the project. And we would show this magazine. And there was another one with the Rath Yatra in San Francisco on the cover. We would show that magazine. And people were very impressed and inspired. And so many became life members. And began to really progress in spiritual life. In 1973, after serving in India for about 3 years, I became quite ill with jaundice, and eventually Srila Prabhupada said that as long as I stay in Bombay, I won't be able to recover. So I came to New Dwarka, and I was given a room just off where the Tulsi greenhouse was. And the devotees took very good care of me. And after a week or two, Srila Prabhupada himself came. And as my health improved, I was able to, come out of my room a little and eventually accompany Srila Prabhupada on his morning walks. Sit with him in the garden here when he would meet with people. Once I came into the garden, and there was no one else there, and he asked how many devotees there were in the community. And I had been curious. It was a very big community, thriving community. So I knew the figures. So I told him, he asked how many men, how many women. I told him. And then I asked, do you want to know how many children there are? He said, oh yes, the children count too. So I told him the number of children. And there are just so many wonderful exchanges that took place here. Srila Prabhupada had wanted to present the message of Krishna consciousness on many fronts. So one area was in the field of science, and at that time Swarup Damodar, who was getting his PhD in biochemistry at the University of California at Irvine, he was coming. And he also had a friend, scientist, Dr. Wolf Rufsky. So they would come, and Srila Prabhupada would speak to them on the basic principle that life comes from life. Life is the soul, the spirit soul, and it comes from the Supreme Soul, or Krishna, not from a combination of chemicals. And he was also wanted to push or encourage devotees in the field of politics. They formed a political party called the In God We Trust Party. Because at the time there was some agitation that slogan, In God We Trust, should be removed. Because the atheists felt, you know, it was unfair to them. So Prabhupada said, yes, we must change the society before they remove it. So he was very enthusiastic. So Srila Prabhupada had very deep personal realization of Krishna consciousness. And based on his realization, he was very enthusiastic to share Krishna consciousness with others. But the irony or the paradox is that although Krishna consciousness is the greatest treasure, people are often unwilling to accept it. And therefore he taxed his brain, as he would sometimes tell us, you must tax your brain to think of how to present Krishna consciousness in a way that people can appreciate it and accept it. And he saw at the time that people had faith in science. And therefore he wanted his devotee scientists to present the same philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but in scientific language. And they did it. They did it. After the scientists, who were sort of comparable to the intellectual class, comes the politicians, who are sort of comparable to the ruling class. And some of Prabhupada's disciples had the idea to infiltrate the political field with Krishna consciousness. And one of them, Balavanta Das, actually ran for mayor of Atlanta. And at the time, the rule in the media was that you had to give equal time to all the different candidates. So Prabhupada liked the idea that a political candidate who was a devotee would get an opportunity to tell people about Krishna consciousness. we didn't really expect to win, but Balavanta Prabhu ended up getting a huge number of votes, far beyond what anyone expected. And he appeared on a television program with the other candidates. And they were all smoking. Now, you know, they were all smoking. And Srila Prabhupada had said that the theme of Balavanta Prabhu's campaign, or the theme of the In God We Trust party, should be that the political leaders must be of good character. If the leaders are not of good character, how can you expect good government? So Balavanta Prabhu was on the television program on a panel with the other candidates, and he began to speak on the same theme. And he said, how can someone who cannot control his senses control the affairs of the government? And then he said, everyone knows that smoking is not good for you. But because people cannot control their senses, they smoke anyway. And all the other candidates became so embarrassed, they immediately hid their cigarettes because they had been exposed. So, Srila Prabhupada had a very clear vision of how Krishna consciousness could help the society in every sphere of life, and how devotees could present Krishna consciousness in a way that it could appeal to people in every sphere of life. And it was amazing that Srila Prabhupada and his disciples, who were all just young men and women, he used to say boys and girls, how much they could do, how empowered they were by Srila Prabhupada's mercy. But at the same time, Srila Prabhupada was very personal in his dealings with people. Sometimes you might think that someone who has such a grand vision, who has such big plans, you know, who would not have time for little people. But Srila Prabhupada did both. He envisioned a mission to help the entire human society, and at the same time, he was very caring for each and every soul. As he said, every soul is important in Krishna consciousness. One incident took place when I was here, you know, because I had been in India for 3 years, and then I got sick and came back. So my parents and sister came to visit me here. And we all went on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada at Cheviot Hills Park. And Srila Prabhupada was so expert that he could engage everyone. On the walk, there were scientists, there were, political aspirants, and there were managers, there were book distributors, and in that mix was my parents. And he was genuinely charming. When he saw my mother, he said, "Oh, Mrs. Teton, you look so young." She was very happy. And at that time, the devotees had organized a Rolls Royce for Srila Prabhupada. So at the end of the walk, we came to the parking lot, and there was the Rolls Royce. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada was about to enter, and my father was sort of eyeing it, you know. And Prabhupada said to him in a very sort of shy, you know, humble, diffident way, "My disciples arranged this for me." And my father immediately said, "Oh, no, no, you deserve it. You deserve it." And then Prabhupada said, "You can ride with me. You come and ride with me." He said, "No, we rented a car. That's all right." But, like, everything was... Prabhupada was just so pleasing. He's just so pleasing. And later I heard that Prabhupada's servant had said, "Srila Prabhupada, everyone likes you so much." And Srila Prabhupada said, "Yes, because I like everyone." Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So it was a big thing. You know, I had come back to America and I was in Los Angeles. So my uncle came from Chicago. The whole family was in Chicago, and my uncle was a doctor. And he was very idealistic, my uncle. And he was disillusioned with doctors. He felt that they were too materialistic. They weren't really thinking of the welfare of the patients, which was his mood. I don't know what he would have thought about the doctors today. But even then, in 1973, he was concerned. And he just went on speaking about his grief at the condition of the medical profession. And Prabhupada just listened with such intent attention and sympathy. I think in that conversation, which probably lasted, I don't know, it for me it was like time stood still, but I don't think that Prabhupada said more than a few sentences. He was just listening with tremendous sympathy. And then at the end, my uncle's, you know, he said, "Well, I've taken enough of your time, I'll take your leave." And as we were walking out, my uncle turned to me and said, "My God, I've never met anyone like him." And he said, "I have to get a picture of him. I've never seen anyone who looks like him." So Prabhupada had a way. Well, it was Krishna. It was Krishna. I'm not sure how many of you saw the DVD earlier of the live footage of Srila Prabhupada here in Los Angeles. But in the morning, when Srila Prabhupada would return from his walk, the devotees would line up on either side of the sidewalk leading to the temple room. And they would offer Prabhupada flowers, and he in turn would give the flowers back to the devotees in a very personal exchange. And one of the things I heard in Boston was that Vishnu John had said to Srila Prabhupada that, you know, you are attracting all of us. And Srila Prabhupada had replied, that is Krishna's trick. In other words, Krishna was manifesting himself through Srila Prabhupada, and Krishna is all attractive. But a pure devotee who's fully surrendered to Krishna also shares in the same qualities of Krishna, almost all of them. And Srila Prabhupada certainly did, and so we were attracted. Another time in his garden, Srila Prabhupada was talking about well, in his language, bogus gurus and yogis. And of course, there are many statements in the scripture that one who is not a devotee of the Lord has no good qualities. And there are statements to the effect that the impersonal speculators may imagine that they're liberated, but because they neglect the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, they fall down. They cannot maintain that impersonal position. And Srila Prabhupada said that what he wrote in his purports was not just based on the philosophy. Of course, it was confirmed by the philosophy. But he said that he had personal experience with so many swamis and yogis in India. He said once he went into the men's room at an ashram, and the swami was just coming out of the men's room, and when Prabhupada entered it, he could smell marijuana smoke. You know, the swami had gone in to have a smoke. So like that, he said he had many personal experiences with them. But he did tell one story about Dr. Mishra. Dr. Mishra had a yoga ashram in upstate New York. And when Srila Prabhupada first went to New York, he met Dr. Mishra, and Dr. Mishra actually gave him a place to stay in an apartment he had in Manhattan. And Srila Prabhupada said that personally they were friends. Although Dr. Mishra was a Mayavadi, impersonalist, Prabhupada said personally they were friends. And he would cook for Dr. Mishra. And Dr. Mishra was very sickly, and he felt that Prabhupada's cooking had actually nursed him back to life. And then Prabhupada said when it came to philosophy, we would differ. And we would argue very vehemently. But personally, we were friends. And I thought that was a very important instruction because and it's sort of natural in the beginning stages. One should avoid impersonalists, because one, if one's weak, one might get confused. One might get confused. But when one is sort of in the intermediate stage of devotional service, and one has firm faith in Krishna and the process of bhakti yoga, one can associate with someone and be friends and still have philosophical differences. You don't have to necessarily abandon the relationship because you have philosophical differences. He said, when it came to philosophy, we would argue very vehemently, but personally, we were friends. While I was sitting with Srila Prabhupada in the garden, he looked up, and I was facing Prabhupada. I couldn't see what was happening at the entranceway to the garden, but Prabhupada's face lit up, and his eyes opened wide, and he became very, very happy. And I thought, wow, who has come? I mean, it's like Prabhupada is meeting his long-lost friend. I mean, who is this? And then I turned and I saw that it was a devotee carrying a tulsi plant. And Srila Prabhupada just became so ecstatic. And he was like so moved by the presence of Tulsi Devi. He said, the whole atmosphere has become sanctified just by the presence of Tulsi Devi. And Prabhupada's servant, Shruti Kirti Das, one of Prabhupada's servants, commented how much Srila Prabhupada just liked the activities of Krishna consciousness. He was such a devotee. He just took pleasure in Krishna consciousness. He said that most devotees would only see Prabhupada in the temple room when he was speaking. Or some might see him in his quarters when he was giving them directions on how to organize the movement and manage and spread the mission. But Shruti Kirti Prabhu said one of the best parts of being Prabhupada's servant was that he could be with Prabhupada when Prabhupada was not acting as the acharya of the world mission, the founder of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And when Prabhupada was alone, sometimes he would just take out his harmonium and begin to sing. There was no one there, no one was recording him, but he just enjoyed being with Krishna. He enjoyed singing songs about Krishna, written by our Vaishnavacharyas. And sometimes Shruti Kirti Prabhu would come in his room and he was reading. Once he went into his room and Srila Prabhupada was reading Krishna book, which is Prabhupada's summary study of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada was relishing. And he looked up at Shruti Kirti Prabhu and said, this book is so wonderful that if you just read this book, you will be Krishna conscious. And then he said, even if you read just one chapter of this book, you'll be Krishna conscious. Then he said, even if you read just one page of this book, you'll be Krishna conscious. Then he said, even if you read just one line of this book, you'll be Krishna conscious. And then he said, even if you read just one word, you will be Krishna conscious. So Srila Prabhupada had such faith in Krishna, and he knew that his books are Krishna. The Krishna book is Krishna. The Bhagavad Gita is Krishna. And by associating with Krishna, your life becomes perfect. My sister also came. She was 2.5 years younger than me, and still is. She stayed with two devotees in the community here. I think Kanka and her husband. And she loved Krishna consciousness. She loved Krishna consciousness. And, by then I was feeling a little better. I was able to move around and interact and... So I mentioned to Srila Prabhupada that she had come, and so Prabhupada met her. And then after he met her, she came with me to the temple room, which was where the Fate Museum is now. And, I was just showing her the pictures on the wall and telling her about the pictures, and there was a very sweet picture of Krishna and the cowherd boys herding the cows in the forest of Vrindavan. Very sweet picture. So I was explaining, this is Krishna, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and this is what the spiritual world is like. And she was just drinking it all in. Just drinking it all in. And suddenly she had like a glimmer of realization, and she turned to me and she said, has Prabhupada seen Krishna? And I said, yes. And she said, oh my God. Yes, I mean, by Prabhupada's association, people could be immediately elevated just by being in his presence. So eventually, as my health got better, Prabhupada was encouraging me to return to Bombay. He said, he used this phrase, so Giriraj, when are you going? Back home, back to Bombay. And the way he said it, I mean, he didn't say it explicitly, but the way he said it, I sort of got the sense that he was saying, if you go back to Bombay and do your service there, you can go back to Godhead. So it happened, and the day when I was leaving, I wanted to take leave of Srila Prabhupada, and he was getting his massage right upstairs in the room with the skylight, just sitting in his gamsha, very relaxed. I told him I was leaving, and I took the opportunity to ask a couple of questions. I was like very inspired, and I asked about the scientists, because he was preaching so much about the scientists, and I said, you know, when you speak about the scientists, you use phrases like fools, rascals, kick them in the face with boots, when we speak to scientists, should we speak in the same terms? And he said, no, you should speak like a gentleman. And so I took leave, and that was the only time I was in Los Angeles with Srila Prabhupada. Many more things happened than I have time to relate, but it was wonderful, and I got a little sense of how dynamic Los Angeles was and how important it was, and how much time Srila Prabhupada spent here, and how much his presence it permeates every aspect of the project. Personally, I was sort of in the mood of separation before the class, and I went up to Srila Prabhupada's quarters, and I was feeling separation. And after a little while of just sitting there, nothing dramatic, but I just felt Prabhupada's presence. And I felt he was saying, you know, I'm still here. I'm still present. And you can feel my association even now. And after the 8-month stay of Srila Prabhupada here, when he finally left, of course, it was very hard on all the devotees, because he had been here for 8 months. They were seeing him every day, and they thought he might just stay forever, he might never leave. And when he left, he spoke to them about the two ways of associating. One is vani, which is transcendental sound or words, and the other is vapu, or physical presence. And he said that, although I'm leaving physically, you can still associate with me by my vani, by my words, by following my instructions. And the association of vani can be more intimate than associating by physical presence. And this is something that we all experience to different degrees, that if we really absorb ourselves in Srila Prabhupada's teachings and endeavor to follow his instructions, we feel his presence. We feel his reciprocation. As Suvas Prabhu mentioned in his introductory remarks, it's 40 years. Unless there's something there, why would we continue to be serving after 40 years? There is something there. And it's love. And that love is based on personal reciprocation. Love means two. There's an exchange. So even though Srila Prabhupada is no longer physically present, but still there's ongoing reciprocation of love with him through service and surrender and inquiry. Even though Prabhupada is not here physically to answer our questions, but if we are serious about our spiritual lives, we will have questions. What does this mean? How do I apply this? How can I improve? And we can get answer from Prabhupada's books and tapes and from other devotees, from Prabhupada's sincere followers. So all the exchanges that we can have with the spiritual master in his physical presence, we can have through Vani, through his words. And as he said, if you read just one word, you can be Krishna conscious. Of course, the problem is we become Krishna conscious and then we forget. So we have to keep absorbed in chanting and hearing about Krishna. And as long as we do, we're on the liberated platform. And if we maintain that effort, even if we're not always successful, but if we maintain that effort, then we will be Krishna conscious. And Srila Prabhupada will take us back home, back to Godhead. And that is the purpose of this temple, this project, this community. Once Srila Prabhupada told me, not everyone will be able to live in the temple. But the temple is necessary so that people can come to the temple and get the idea of how they can be Krishna conscious at home. In principle, there's nothing we do at the temple that you can't do in your own home. Of course, Prabhupada said that best is to live in the temple. And next best is to live near the temple and come every day. But if you can't, due to circumstances, live close enough to the temple to come every day, then you can make your home into a temple. And you can do the same things at home that the devotees do in the temple. And whenever possible, on Sundays and holy days, and whenever possible, come to the temple and associate with the more advanced devotees in the temple and get more encouragement in this wonderful process that is leading to a glorious result, most glorious result. Hare Krishna. So I heard the bell. I thought it was time for Arti, but it seems we have maybe 2 minutes. Would anyone like to say anything in the last 2 minutes? Yes. My thoughts on impersonal Brahman. I spit at the thought. No, impersonal Brahman is transcendental. Srimad Bhagavatam explains that the Absolute Truth is realized in three features, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. And they are non-dual, Advaita. They're non-dual. They're all the same. But for a devotee, the idea of merging into impersonal Brahman is anathema. He doesn't want it. Because in impersonal Brahman, there's no loving reciprocation with Krishna. There's no chanting and hearing the glories of Krishna. There's no rendering of service to Krishna. And therefore, one great devotee, Prabodhananda Saraswati, said, Kaivalya Narakayate, that the thought of Kaivalya, oneness, impersonal oneness, Narakayate, is like, it's hellish for him. It's worse than hell. Because at least in hell, you can sing the glories of Krishna. But in impersonal Brahman, there's nothing. So, those are my thoughts in 2 minutes.